next door.
I'm going to call the Morrill County Board of Commissioners work session, a special work session to order. And we have one item on the agenda tonight. Exit 159, I-84, Tower Road Interchange Area Management Plan Discussion. Where's our man? There he is. Turn it over to him.
Thank you. Tamara, can we get that PowerPoint?
Ah, yes.
I need to share it with...
That's not the right one.
Yeah.
Let me minimize that. Here we go. Should we do an, let's see, should we do slideshow?
Yes, please.
Excellent.
There we go.
Okay.
Okay. And are you sharing it on the Zoom?
Is it, is it... So I need to click, I need to do, okay, hold on. I'll get it. Share screen. Forgot about that.
Should be the $3.
That's the $3.
Or is it the little, I can't see it. I think it's that one.
It's that one.
There you go.
There we are. Okay.
I think the one...
Share the straight, yeah, straight down the one. Left.
Got it. Got it. Okay, and share. I did look over your slides, Nick, sorry. So, okay.
All right. Where?
Well, the floor is yours. We could do introductions if you'd like. So this is, let's just do this. So the planning department, really, Caitlin's been the project manager for a year and a half on the interchange area management plan. It's a grant project funded by ODOT. And the ODOT team is on the phone. Teresa Penninger, Marlo Stanton. Maybe, I don't know if others are on the phone. So this is just an informal work session. Nick from Kittleson and Associates is going to run us through the interchange area management plan, and we'll allow time for the planning commission members and the board of commissioners for Q&A. We do need to wrap up no later than 6:15. We'll take a quick break. Michaela and the team has some dinner, tacos and whatnot, just across the hall in the kitchen, and then we'll be back to start our planning commission meeting at 6:30. Anything else? We need to do introductions, or are we good? Okay, good. Take it away, Nick. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for coming out. As Tamara said, my name is Nick Foster. I'm with the transportation engineering and planning firm Kittleson and Associates, and we are the lead consultant working with ODOT and the county, as well as several other area public and private stakeholders, and I'll talk a little bit more about that on this interchange area management plan. So I appreciate you all coming out and giving some of your time to talk with us about this project tonight. This was working.
Let's see. Is it, do you want me to advance?
Yeah, if you can just advance.
Hold on. Okay.
There we go. Okay. Great. So tonight, we'll talk a little bit, try to get you all caught up, a little bit on the project background. Then we'll go through the actual interchange area management plan itself, and then get into the actual code amendments and other things that will be coming coming your all's way as we move through the adoption process of this project. All right. Now it's working. Great. All right, so on the project background, you know, the purpose of the IAMP, or any IAMP, is to provide for the long-term function of an interchange as the area develops. They're actually written into to Oregon regulations as a way to protect the massive investment that goes into an interchange. And so they are this multidisciplinary plan that looks at not only transportation, but also, you know, from a mobility perspective, but also safety, access around the interchange, onto the roads that connect to the interchange, and then the land use around the interchange, and how is that managed? And ultimately, the goal of this is to provide some type of clear end vision for everyone who's going to be involved in the future of the interchange, whether that's you all from the county's perspective, or for people who are already doing business down there, or who are hoping to be doing business down there or developing the area. And so it provides some type of roadmap to really help guide the future of the area as growth in that area occurs. They're required anytime there's going to potentially be any modifications to an interchange. And so in this case, while there isn't necessarily something that's funded right away, as you all are aware, there's a lot going on in that area. And so in order to, you know, see improvements happen in the interchange, this type of plan needs to be in place first. With that, here's our general project area. That orange highlight there is our kind of where we did our detailed transportation analysis, where we'll be looking at access, and we'll talk about that in more detail later on. But then that dotted red outline that's there on the screen, that covers all the different land use we consider. That area is what we looked at for future development, really, that could directly impact the interchange, which a lot of times when we do these, they're actually, it's pretty tight around the interchange. This particular one, as you all know, it's Tower Road in and out. And so we had a, we covered a big area of what we're considering out there. And again, we're looking at a 20-year horizon with our traffic projections when we do this. And I'll talk a little bit more about those later on and the type of development we assume in the area.
But so a question on that. It doesn't look like you included anything really out in RDO Farms. I mean, in the last 15 years, we've seen quite the development out there in terms of dairies, and they're adding another one out there, which are major sources of employment and traffic, both for employees commuting to and from and trucks going in and out. So why wasn't RDO, the impacts of RDO considered?
I think they were.
Yeah. Well, I see the study line, which doesn't include the dairies.
I think we talked about this was settled about a year ago. Mm-hmm. I think some was, one, a lot of that development has already happened, it sounds like. And then...
Well, one dairy is just finishing up now, so...
Well, and the primary access for that dairy is Marty Myers Road, for that dairy. So the traffic volumes, well, that's the interchange, but the, wasn't the study area went farther east and west?
The land use study area is there in the red, so it does go a ways out. But yeah, if something had access to Marty Myers, it would not have been captured here, mm-hmm. Because we were looking at things that...
But the point isn't necessarily that dairy. The point is that just because there was already three out there and now there's four, who's to say there's not a fifth and a sixth out there that would be using this road? That's really my point.
And we do also assume background development. These are just the ones where we did...
These
are the ones where we did the intensive look at what do we think is going to be there. And I think, as you'll see, we've got a pretty... big assumption about
so
future traffic.
I don't drive down that section of the freeway often, so is there another exit a little bit further west?
Yes.
Yes, it's the one.
What's that exit, Three Mile Canyon?
Marty Myers Road.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what you were talking about. Okay.
Yeah, 3 miles been renamed to Marty Myers.
Yeah.
Yep. Does the exit say that too?
Mm-hmm. It does now.
It does.
Okay. I go down to Arlington when I go that way.
I think that's new within less than 12 months, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And that's not, how far? 5 miles.
It's exit 151. So
it's 8 miles.
8 miles.
So the difference is the actual access control and the interchange design is in this study area, but the background traffic from a development much bigger than that area was considered. We didn't just look at this little yellow area.
Yeah.
I mean, we did build out assumptions, Kittleson did, of all of this area out here.
Yeah. So.
It looks like kind of a, sort of an arbitrary line.
I don't think they're off the hook, Commissioner Wendholz, because they're part of the background traffic, and they're indirect, and so we're looking at cumulative effects that come directly off of that interchange.
So is that kind of the way traffic flows out in that part of the farm? Is kind of how you have that boundaries, or why did you call it a little boundaries?
Yeah, so those are drawn on parcel lines of areas that were zoned. Let me see if I have that. I mean, up here on a slide too, you'll see later, but those are ones that were zoned some type of industrial use. We were trying to capture a lot of those. And again, so kind of a higher intensity traffic generator potentially that again directly accesses Tower Road and will use this interchange as its primary access.
Okay.
So, identified concerns with the interchange itself. One is the future development north and south of the interchange and the inability of the current configuration to handle it based on our projections. So that's longer term. You also have accesses located within close proximity to the interchange. Some of that may not be initially much of a challenge now. For instance, here on the north side, the National Access Road or the Railroad Maintenance Road, because there's nothing there, no traffic north of there right now. But if development happens there, then we have a different scenario. And then you have, a road right next to a busy interchange, and that can present some safety and mobility challenges too. We also, at the existing interchange ramps, from our own experience, from talking with people who drive their personal vehicles or who drive truck through this interchange, we also heard a lot about people being concerned about the sight distance. That bridge has a high crest, it's narrow, has the cement railings, and so people feel nervous if they're making a left-hand turn, or actually even coming eastbound making that right-hand turn. People didn't always feel like they could see very well. And then for trucks who are coming westbound, making that left turn to go south on Tower Road, we heard a lot about some of the challenges with that turning radius for them as they try to make that turn south on Tower Road. And then extending south on Tower Road itself, some of these concerns remain about its ability to handle future growth, especially at the level we're going to talk about later on as a two-lane road or a three-lane road, especially at the intersections with the airport, Coonsey, and others. So development, we had our background development be generally assumed just based on traffic growth, ODOT's own statewide model. And then we add on top of that some specific development. So everything in our study area, we made some assumptions about. Sometimes we knew development was being considered, like certain data centers or the solar farm that's now looks much more operational than it did a year ago when we started this project. We did actually grab a couple of a farm worker housing development as well as a data center that were outside of our study area, and we did include them in our assumptions. But what you can see is when we add that all together and do our best to estimate what that could all generate. And so I guess I'll add one other thing, that all that area in purple for what wasn't already assumed as a data center or some other specific use that you see there on the map, we assumed it developed up at the level of intensity that the Port of Morrow is at today. So over the next 20 years, if it hit that same level of intensity of development you see within the Port of Morrow in terms of land use coverage and that industrial use type, about what might we see in traffic volumes in here? And you can see it on the screen, it's about 24,000 more vehicle trips per day than are out there today, or even projected in the background. And for context, through that interchange today, there's about 6,000 to 7,000 vehicles per day. So five times, when you add that 24,000 onto that 6,000, you're at five times the level of traffic that is out there today, roughly. So that's obviously gonna look quite a bit different than what is out there today in terms of activity and in terms of traffic. If all that assumption is realized, we are looking at a pretty intense development. A pretty intensive increase in traffic. So just on our process, we started the project summer of 2024. We went through, we had several meetings with advisory committees along the way. You see those with the orange stars. We had two different advisory committees. One was made of agency staff in the Port of Morrow, staff from ODOT, City of Boardman, Morrow County, Port of Morrow, different state agencies also that are involved because of the airport or the military infrastructure, things like that. Then we also had what we called our public advisory committee, which included several landowners and property owners in the area, other interests in the area too. So we met with them at four different points throughout the course of the project. We also, about a year ago, did specific outreach to the freight community through either one-on-one calls with individuals who regularly drive through there, supplying the existing farms or other uses there, or who are the farms themselves, the receivers of the freight. And we did a survey that we partnered with Loves on, where they were able to distribute it to people who were coming in and stopping in for fuel, shower, whatnot, have you. I think we gave free coffee if you took the survey. So we were able to connect with people that way too. And now we're into the final stages of actually having the interchange area management plan itself developed and written. Again, just a little bit more on the advisory, on the outreach activities. So again, four meetings with our technical advisory committee, two with that public advisory committee, five one-on-one or small group interviews with the freight, and then our one freight survey open house also to the public. We will also be going next week to ODOT's Mobility Advisory Committee, which includes representatives of a lot of different types of transportation, but largely what that committee ends up focusing on is the movement of freight, especially oversized freight and large freight. So we will be going and meeting with them for their feedback as well, too.
So out of the surveys, what was the feedback from them?
There we go. I have a slide on that. So here we are. Some of those key concerns, again, that site distance, the narrow width of that existing bridge, the difficulty of turning on to Tower Road from that westbound off-ramp, that left turn to go south.
I drive the school bus, so
okay.
Every morning on that road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you know it.
Yes.
School buses, the turning radius of a school bus is actually, it's worse than some trucks. Yeah, that's a good, good perspective. And then the grade of the eastbound off-ramp came up too. It's probably a little steeper than would be built today. Large vehicles starting and stopping on it don't particularly care for it. At the point we were talking with them, we had some ideas of what our alternative concepts for improving it would be. Some included roundabouts where the interchange ramps hit Tower Road. Some included signals. And we got general support for all of them. We heard some different things. Some people were concerned about roundabouts from a large vehicle perspective. Some people who drive large vehicles actually were supportive of roundabouts because that way they would be less likely to have to stop on the interchange ramps because they could just kind of slowly roll through, and if there's a gap, they can just roll right on through. Some of them had cited their experience driving through them in, say, the Tri-Cities or elsewhere in the area. But no one... Generally, there was consensus of these things we're looking at are all going to improve what's out there today, and especially as this area grows, so let's get to it. So to develop our concepts, we worked with our advisory committees to draw up different options. We on the project team also drew up our own ideas too. We tried to synthesize everything everyone was coming up with, and we initially had 9 different concepts, and so we did a quick screening of those. Those are the ones maybe you start to see on the side there, where you can see it's just kind of a hand level of drawing to kind of get an idea of what those would look like, do an initial assessment of their feasibility. And then we actually got into our computer-aided drafting software and drew up 5 different concepts for a more detailed evaluation that included a lot more traffic operations analysis, cost estimates, and things like that. We evaluated those last 5 concepts in a more detailed way against these evaluation criteria. We've got implementation at the top there because that's probably what we spent the most time talking about. A lot of people were concerned there's not a lot of funding just to go out there and start to build something today. It's but there's a lot of development coming. And so how can we make this a project that can be built in single phases instead of maybe all, you know, one big cost all at once, which might allow it, which will allow it to more easily sync up with development where it can, they can be partners in building out it piece by piece. So that ended up being one of our driving missions with this, was to make it so this project could be built out in, you know, in phases, which makes it a little more realistic for actual build out. We also looked at things related to safety, the mobility through the interchange and on Tower Road for freight, personal vehicles, people walking and biking. We considered impacts to the surrounding land uses, right of way, the ability to accommodate future growth. And then we also looked at access, spacing, and connectivity in the area. On the screen here, you have five different options that we, those are the ones we took through for more detailed evaluation. The first three are all are pretty similar to what's out there today. You know, what we call a diamond interchange. So you know, ramp goes up, ramp goes down the other side. One puts signals up there at the at those terminals, one puts roundabouts. The other one's actually a different form. We call it a tight diamond. It's the type of interchange you have at Biggs Junction. For comparison. And that one, just because that they all involve, all three of those on the top involve replacing the bridge. And if you're doing that, the longer that bridge is, the more expensive it is. So the tight diamond kind of shrinks up that footprint a little bit, just some of the appeal of that. The bottom two are a little bit different. They keep the southern part of the interchange, so that's I-84 eastbound, still in that diamond form. Up and over, what you see on most interchanges around here. However, on the north side, what you've actually got is you still have, you know, a bit of a diamond form. I'm gonna walk over here real fast, but you still could come off the freeway here like you do today. These ramp terminals move in all cases, in all of these concepts. The actual ramps kind of elongate, so they're not quite as steep, and they provide more distance for cars to stack on them if needed to. But then these two ones on the bottom, they also add what we call, it's called the partial cloverleaf, where you actually, if you think about it, if you, the old Ontario interchange, not the new one, but the old one that's been there right before the Idaho border has this too. It's, you come off the freeway and you loop around and come back on it, and you can make a right turn. So instead of coming off and making a left, you loop around and you make a right. Right? Because that's the dominant movement today coming from the westbound. People come up and they make a left. Well, then people going north to go over to Portland or wherever, or west, they are also making a left. And you have, so you have these, that conflict. By going to this partial cloverleaf design on this interchange, you now, your left turns can go, they only have to worry about the conflicting traffic coming from the north side, which today is not much. And then your other big movement is now a right turn. Again, it's only conflicting movement. It's coming from the north. Today, not much. So, and that one can also be built out in pieces, too. You can move the ramps. You can build the cloverleaf first. And we'll talk about some of these things later. But before I move on to talking about the preferred concept and where we're going with the actual plan, any other questions on the background or how we got to where we did? Okay, great, thank you. And if you do have questions along the way, feel free to speak up, as some of you have already been doing. All right, so where we wound up, as you probably guessed since I got excited talking about this partial cloverleaf, is we wound up with concept number 5 as the preferred concept. The big reason for that is it does have, of all the concepts, probably the greatest flexibility on implementation. And we'll talk about the phases here in coming slides. And we developed 3 different phasing scenarios for it. Get into that a little bit more. Also, from a safety perspective, the safety performance of roundabouts is you know, better than what's out there today, and generally speaking, better than signals as well. So it's another reason for, you know, liking the roundabouts. The roundabouts, because you don't need a left turn lane at the signal like you would have the signal, you can get away with still retaining a two-lane bridge, which can help with the costs as well as the phasing piece of things. So potentially you could retain that bridge for a longer period of time under this concept than you could with the signals.
Does this concept include potentially expanding that bridge, or is that basically, no, this is going to be the bridge we've got and that's it?
This concept as it is over the 20-year period here just assumes the bridge remains.
Okay.
So how do you make sure that, like, even at Biggs, you see it sometimes where traffic almost gets backed up onto the freeway, which is super dangerous, but then with that two-lane bridge?
Yeah, so the number of lanes on the bridge, unless you're really widen that bridge out to like four or five lanes, you know, just adding that center turn lane on that bridge wouldn't necessarily change that part. So what we looked at, the challenge with what you see there is, of course, yeah, there's a lot of traffic trying to come off and it can't get on there. Under the analysis we did with the 20-year build-out, we should have capacity to handle that. Some of the ways we've done that is, one, again, without having this major left turn conflict coming off, having it be a right turn, and having it kind of stay in its own space and be more of a outside the roundabout, just kind of a yield-controlled ramp coming off, tends to flow better. While you do have development potential north of the interchange, it's not nearly what is going on south of the interchange. So even if this does develop at the intensity it could under the zoning, you still, the traffic coming from this way isn't so significant that it's going to really cause this right, at least in our projections, cause this right turn to back up a lot. We also have a southbound right turn kind of bypass to get those right turners who are coming from that north side and going west, just to get them out of the roundabout completely itself too. So it frees up capacity at the roundabout. Individuals who want to go north could use, potentially just use that diamond ramp like they do today. Again, just a right turn. So that's kind of what we're doing up here to help make more capacity to prevent what's going on at Biggs from happening here, is to do, have as many things be right turns as possible. Same thing here on the south side. Again, dominant movement today and in the future, we're projecting, is still going to be this right turn heading south on Tower Road. So we actually, in this case, we've pulled it out of the roundabout and gave it its own acceleration lane into the future five-lane Tower Road, which you'll see as part of this too. So those are the main elements that get it that way. Yeah?
I'm sure you guys have probably talked about different issues in the past when designing this, but I'm a little concerned about some of the super mega loads that we approved permits going through on quite a few on Tower.
Yeah.
We're talking 250, 60-foot long loads,
yeah.
800,000 pounds, 20-foot wide, trying to get around those roundabouts.
Yeah, that is something that would have to be considered in that final design phase. Because I know,
to his point, I agree with where you're coming from. I realize you don't have the answer to it probably offhand. This is relative scale. These can be adjusted. We can adjust the radiuses of roundabouts to make it so that if you do have something like that, you can accommodate it.
Yeah, you can make a fully mountable center island or something like that to help with that too.
You're still probably not taking it over the bridge. But.
I mean, it's still something. And there's the other pieces. Yeah, some of those loads that today can't go over the bridge, you know, they would still have to do what they do today. They have to cross over and come and go this way.
So you're actually having two exits there on the westbound, is that what I'm saying?
And we're actually keeping two exits on the westbound in part because of the overside load issue, because you do have you have a lot of loads that can't, oversized loads on 84 that can't fit under the bridge, and so they go up and over today. So by keeping this here, we retain the ability for those loads to do the up and over still.
So how do those navigate a roundabout? Because most of those are on a low boy with low ground clearance.
I think you can adjust the radius of that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're talking about a truck that's 200 feet long, maybe we'd have a problem. But your standard I would say your standard under 100-foot semi-truck and trailer, I think they'd be able to navigate it just fine.
Yeah.
Just looking at the radiuses from here, looking at the scale.
Yeah.
I'm thinking a low boy.
Yeah. Another thing you can look at doing is where do you bring this actual ramp in on there? How much of the around the dish have to navigate? Yeah. Do you do something separate where you put those oversized loads? Yeah. You actually have a separate way for them to pass through.
It's a rover.
But that is something that would be looked at during the final design phases. Yeah.
And then who's actually going to take that second exit?
The second
exit? The second one?
Yeah.
Somebody who's going south on tower. And if they want to go south on tower, I imagine it'd be named something as such.
It would be named
Southbound Tower Road, something like that.
And I could still take the first exit to go south.
Yes. You still could. We don't have with the roundabout, we don't have the ability to do with the signal to block like you do in Ontario where they actually make it, you can't go across.
Yeah.
Someone may do that and make the mistake. But
be a lot
most people will quickly figure out that that's faster to do that. And you'll see this gets into the phasing too. You'll see another advantage of having.
They have it in Ontario? No, I've not seen that before.
They have it with a traffic signals.
Hmm?
With traffic signals, not with roundabouts. Exit 376.
Where there's two exits.
They have an A and a B.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that the main Ontario exit that goes by the Walmart and
everything?
Yeah. Okay.
So you're talking about funding later on, or what?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So phasing option one here. So there's a lot of challenges to developing north of I-84 with that railroad crossing there and that and other things. So let's say that development north of I-84 doesn't happen within this 20-year period we're talking about. So we looked at the scenario where that happens. So essentially, you have not zero traffic coming from the north, but very close to zero like you do today. When you do that, we have these different phases here. The first phase is just building out this westbound loop ramp configuration here. So coming in that way, and then having your standard off-ramp here. Again, under this, you could put a median in right there to make it so you couldn't make a left turn off to really make it difficult for someone. Or you could rely on the signing. That's kind of a design detail. But under this, you'll see there's actually not a signal or a roundabout here. We don't actually project getting to the point of needing to do that type of traffic control if nothing happens north of the freeway, because you've got basically a free running right turn movement here and a free running left turn movement there. There's virtually no opposing traffic coming from the north. So that's one upshot to this particular type of approach. Under the scenario, potentially do you need this ramp for anything other than oversized loads? Maybe not, really. Whether it could be made for oversized loads only or how that works is kind of one of those things that needs to be worked out in design. But there's that. The second phase of this would be actually realigning this ramp terminal onto I-84 going east, adding in this right turn lane from northbound Tower Road onto it, making it a two-lane terminal with a very long merge in for the extra capacity over time. And again, under this scenario, with the free running right onto Tower Road here, we actually, again, don't run into the need for a traffic signal or roundabout at the ramp terminal. We can get away with unsignalized intersections just with some extra turn lanes.
Just as a curiosity, you mentioned the railroad crossing being an obstacle for any future northern development.
Yeah.
Do any of these plans implement an option or the ability, because of the way that we grade it, to have an overpass over the top of the rail crossing?
Yeah, the next two.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got ahead of you, sorry.
Yeah. So, let's just point out, this one costs, right now, estimated between $95 to $120 million total, not per phasing component. The phasing components are each obviously cheaper, but yeah, pretty expensive. Phasing option number two, you can see the cost goes quite a bit up. This, and under this scenario, we've now got development going on north of the freeway. So assuming it develops as we've, you know, projected it could under the zoning, yep, it does include all these same components. So again, you build out your ramps first. Then later on, as more development occurs, especially north, then we get into things like adding in the roundabouts themselves to interchange ramp terminals. We also need to then have a bridge over the railroad in order to get that there. Oh, you got something in the chat?
How's that ground zone on the north side of the railroad?
Industrial.
Yeah.
And Marlo said the total, Marlo's the interchange engineer from ODOT, that these total cost numbers include Tower Road enhancements too, correct?
I actually don't think they do.
That's a good question.
It's just the interchange?
It's just the interchange area.
Okay.
Yeah. I have to go back and double check that, Marlo.
It's a really good question. Do we have something that covers the anticipated cost of the...
Yes.
Improvements? Okay.
Yes. So, anyway, under this one, you can see it's broken out into five different phases. So, again, could be implemented in pieces as development occurs.
And Tamara, I assume you feel like these estimates are sort of accurate on the cost?
Construction has gotten very expensive. There's extensive grading needed. And this is without the bridge. I mean, the bridge adds a whole lot more on to it, too.
I mean, this is like what our whole school bond was in the front off ramp.
Yeah. Yes. It's a lot. It's a lot of new road. It's a lot of grading. It's right-of-way, too. This does include right-of-way. These all require buying up. Not just the right-of-way you see on screen. But this also includes buying up these parcels here because they lose their ability to have access unless they can get access over the railroad to another road. So by putting this in, they get landlocked. Or any of the concepts would have done that. They would be landlocked without access over the railroad. So that is part of the cost. That is a big part of the cost estimate too, is right-of-way estimate. Under this option here, it's very similar. The final product on there is the same as it was on the other option. This one just builds it in fewer phases, so the cost goes down a little bit. This was if there was to be money made available publicly to build this, or if there was, you know, some very large development that came in and was putting this in, or putting in a chunk of it. So it's just a faster version of what was shown. Tower Road, as I hinted at in the previous slides, when we get to that, you know, 30,000 vehicles a day, you know, that's potentially more traffic than's on any other road in Marlboro County right now. So you're looking at, you know, likely a five-lane road, you know, two lanes in each direction, center turn lane, where there's driveways. We looked at options that include both roundabouts at these public roads, that Love Southern Driveway, some of you may already know this, but that is a public road, it's not actually just the Love's driveway, so roundabout there, roundabout at Coonsey, and then one at Boardman Airport Road, or Boardman Airport Lane, and then south of there is where you'd neck it back down to one lane in each direction. We also looked at signalized intersection concepts. Again, you'd be looking at two lanes in each direction plus your left turn lanes at the signals, narrowing down once you get south of the airport. All right, then the other piece is access management. So again, state is looking for all accesses that are within about a quarter mile of the interchange to access a local road to get onto a different road to connect to the main road there, so in this case Tower Road. So several accesses shown here are obviously within that quarter mile range, which expands a little bit depending on where the final ramp terminals end up at. So what we're recommending there is that as development occurs back here, is they build out, you know, a collector road network where these properties could then access that and use that to get out to that quarter mile distance instead of trying to access directly onto